This is going to be a good one. I can feel it. Welcome to the Pre-Dead Boys. It's a podcast where we talk about the history and culture of death and decomposition. I'm Dorian. With me as always is Max. What's up, Max?
Hey, Dorian. How's it going?
Good. Probably should just say up top, there's a little bit of a ruckus going on upstairs, so if you hear some noise in the background, it's not a ghost. Don't be alarmed.
We've got a ruckus among us.
Yes.
We had to switch out the noise-canceling bed sheet that I nail into my ceiling every week, so maybe that's part of it. It's not dampening as well.
Yeah, the bed sheet that we bought at Guitar Center, the noise canceling bed sheet.
It's got a bunch of egg cartons stapled to it. you have any banter or intro stuff, Dorian?
No.
I do.
Thank God.
Yeah. I was just going to ask that and leave you hanging.
Leave me sweating.
Just as a fun follow-up to our last episode on mausoleums.
Yes.
I went to Cleveland this past week.
Yeah.
And while I was there, stopped in to see James A. Garfield's tomb and mausoleum.
He's up in Cleveland.
He's up in Cleveland.
Is he from Cleveland?
I wasn't paying that much attention. Maybe. I went to their art museum, which is very free and very beautiful and
okay.
Very good. And jumped in there just really quick to see the tomb because I felt like I had to.
Yeah.
And I found out that Abraham Lincoln was not the only president to have his tomb burgled after he died.
Something about presidents.
In 2014, a bunch of hooligans broke into Garfield's tomb and took a bunch of, quote, commemorative spoons.
What was the significance of the spoons that were in the tomb with our former president?
I don't know. I guess it was just from his inauguration. They found a bunch of beer bottles and, like, weeds in the tomb.
So at least one weed. Right.
So they think someone was dared to like break in and then they had to take something with them as proof. And they just found these spoons and were like, I don't know, I'll take these.
I bet you won't steal those spoons. Bet you won't do it.
Dude, they're commemorative. No.
You can't steal the presidential spoons.
The president's spoons are missing.
Well, thank God at least nobody tried to make out with James Garfield.
Yeah, he was nowhere near as attractive as Abraham Lincoln, so. So, if we got nothing else, I guess we can start talking.
I got nothing. I am a void shell of a man. I'm eager to get into this topic so that I can fill that void with
with
some sweet
death.
Sparkling beverage, but and death.
So, before we crack into the topic, so there's nothing under the couch this week. Instead, I hid something for you in that box over there. So how about you grab that box, pop it open, spin the wheel, and see what our topic is going to be.
What? It's a hedgehog?
It's a hedgehog.
Sculpture made out of seashells.
Uh-huh.
How cute.
It's very
cute
sweet.
Guy. Yeah.
Now, do you know how this ties into what our topic is going to be, or do you have any guesses?
I am guessing that we're finally going to do, just chuck that over there, we're finally going to do our video game episode and talk about how Sonic died.
Nope.
Oh.
No, this hedgehog was purchased for me by my sister when she was in China.
Okay.
And today's topic is death in China. I don't know how you would know that.
All right.
But we're going to be talking about the history of death and death culture in China,
okay.
Which should be pretty cool. So just up front, the aim of this episode and this podcast in general has never been and will never be to fetishize exoticism and treat other cultures like they're weird. I know death culture in China has a long and varied history, but some of the stuff that I dug up, there's just not a lot of info on it because, you know, a lot of Western historians for a long time were just like, I don't really care enough to study anything about Asia.
Yeah.
And they just wrote the entire culture off. So we're trying to highlight the ways that we, as people, interact and deal with death. So if you came to this podcast looking for something exploitative...
You came to the wrong fucking place.
If you came to this podcast looking for something shitty, sorry.
Take that garbage to some other trashy podcast. Go watch Fox News or some shit. I don't give a fuck.
We just make fun of the cryonics people. Nobody else, just cryonics.
One day Max Moore is going to listen to our podcast and he's going to just find us and beat us up. So we have no beef with you, Max.
Also worth noting that we are not scholars in China. I took 2 years of Mandarin Chinese in high school. So if we pronounce things wrong, please don't yell at us. But you can let us know. That'd be nice.
Yeah, DMs are open on Twitter. And you may say that you're not an expert, but I'll just come forward and say I've seen Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon at least 13 times. So I kind of know a thing or two about Chinese culture.
I've seen a lot of Ong Bak movies.
Ong Bak is Thai. That's how I know you're not a scholar.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Oh, no.
You could say Bruce Lee, though.
Who did Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon?
That was a John Woo? Fuck.
Uh-oh.
Let me consult my sources.
John Woo does The Doves, right?
Yeah. Ang Lee. It's Ang Lee.
Oh, okay.
That's the name of the director. I know that he directed the masterpiece, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. He also directed the not-so-much-a-masterpiece, Hulk, starring Eric
Bana. Oh, the Edward Norton? No. Eric Bana.
Yeah, the first one.
Oops.
Yeah, real dud.
Real stinker there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I suppose that without further ado or discussion of...
We already had a lot of ado. So, with the ado out of the way.
Now that we've done the ado, let's crack into the topic with the still unofficial, still unsponsored, Pre-Dead Boys crack into the topic moment.
Woo!
Still not officially sponsored by LaCroix. I don't know what we have to do.
What do you want from us?
Please let us know.
Ooh. Thank you for changing it up with the coconut. Did you just... Did you just lick your laptop screen?
I had LaCroix on it. What was I supposed to do? Use my finger?
I just was not expecting that. I was just going to thank you for shaking it up and getting some coconut this time around, but I'm...
Sorry.
Go ahead and jump into the topic because I'm going to be dumbfounded by that for a few minutes.
Me just doing like a Big Lebowski long tongue lick of my laptop. Oh boy. So let's move through this from the past to the present, sequentially. If we just hop into this little wormhole here that's on the other side of this weird door in my basement.
Oh, that's what's under the couch.
That's what's actually, I just throw things into it and it spits them back out later and it just happens to line up with our topics.
That's how you pick the topic. You're like, pennies. Pennies. What do I have that's related to pennies?
It's penny related. I need to appease the hole. Let's jump back about 3,000 years to 1,000 BCE and hang out with our friends, the Bo people. You probably haven't heard of the Bo people before. They were a pretty small people group. Dorian, can you hit us with this biographical sketch of the Bo people?
Absolutely.
Actually, before you do that, can you hit me up with the photo that I've put at the top of your notes?
Yeah, let me just describe this photo. It's a photo of Elon Musk holding open his jacket to reveal a t-shirt that has a skeleton ripping a hole out of the t-shirt, coming out of what appears to be hell, forward out of his shirt. And the text overlaid on top of this photo says, "Let me out of this shirt. This guy sucks ass."
This guy won't stop launching cars into space.
Thanks for always keeping a high quality skull related comedy on the top of the show notes here.
So now please break us off this biographical sketch of the Bo people.
The Bo people are an ethnic minority who used to live on the borders of China's Sichuan and Yunnan provinces. The vibrant culture of the Bo people developed around 3,000 years ago, and the early Bo people aided the Western Zhou in ousting their Yin rulers at the end of the Shang dynasty around 1100 BC. They flourished until 400 years ago when they mysteriously vanished from the area. Nobody is exactly sure what caused this disappearance, but during the Ming Dynasty, 1368 to 1644 AD, they were persecuted and massacred by the Imperial Army. It is believed that many of the survivors decided to flee to neighboring regions to survive, changing their names to avoid detection and merging into the local populations.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, there's nothing super notable in there. That's about all we have of the Bow people, biographically at least. We do have something else they left behind, and here's a photo of it if you want to scroll down and tell me what you think that is.
Looking like a cliff with some grass on it and a craggy cliff. That's about all I got.
Just a craggy cliff.
Yeah.
Scroll down. You'll do a little bit of like CSI enhance work there.
Enhance. Ooh, looks like the craggy cliff has some wooden steps, maybe? It's a...
Oh, buddy.
Steel, pegs, wood.
Oh, buddy.
Help me.
Those aren't steps. Those are coffins.
What?
Those are the hanging cliff coffins.
Whoa.
Yeah. If you want to describe what's in that picture, because it's very, very cool.
Okay. Yeah, it's this massive cliff where, okay, you take two poles and you shove them into the side of the cliff and put a coffin on top of it. Now multiply that by, I don't know, hundreds of these?
Yeah.
Oh my God. This is buck wild.
Yeah. So these are cliff coffins. They're sometimes referred to as hanging coffins, which is inaccurate. They're not really suspended by like a rope. I don't know.
Right.
But this was a practice that scholars believe originated with the Bow people of China. The practice would later spread to parts of Indonesia, where it's still in practice among a few groups. The theory is that the Bow people, when they were forcibly kicked out of China, they would have migrated south and then eventually into Indonesia, where they mixed their customs with some local ones and ended up passing this specific one along. Now, as you can imagine, getting a bunch of coffins up the side of a cliff is a pretty intense process, and the coffins are pretty heavy duty as well. If you can give us a description of a find in 1979.
There was immense care, difficulty, and risk required to make and suspend the hanging coffins. Therefore, these types of burials may have been reserved for the elite and wealthy. Professor Lin Shang of Sichuan University recovered one coffin from a cliff on the Daning River in 1979. The coffin was about 7 feet long. His studies indicated that the wood was of a very special type called nanmu. This tree could grow up to 40 meters high, and its wood was very dense and decay resistant. The makers had cut the tree in half and carved out the insides. They used one side of the trunk to house the corpse, and the other side as the lid to the coffin. The coffins lie in three types of placements along the cliffs: on wooden beams that jut out from vertical rock walls, inside natural caves or crevices, and on rocky ledges along the wall. They range from about 30 feet to more than 400 feet off the ground.
Yeah.
Together, the corpse and coffin could easily weigh several hundred pounds.
Yeah, so this is remarkable. They're very, very high up.
And very heavy.
Extremely heavy, because did you catch how they make them?
Right. So they cut this tree. Now, they say they cut the tree in half. Are we talking hamburger style or hot dog style?
Hot dog style.
Okay, just to make
sure. Is that a universal elementary school art class experience?
They carry that into art college. They teach hamburger style and hot dog style.
No, really?
No, I made that up.
Oh, I was like, I didn't take any art classes after elementary school, so.
No, you know that I just always make fun of my own formal education at a prestigious art college. I just make dumb little kid jokes about it all the time.
But yeah.
So, they cut this wood.
Yeah, they would cut the tree down, right. Lay it down on its side, cut the tree hot dog style, and then hollow out one of the sides, lay the body in that,
yeah,
and then place the top half of the tree back on to kind of recomplete the tree, and then they would seal it.
Yeah, okay.
So this is, it's heavy. The wood is dense wood, and you have a body in it.
Right.
And it said that that one find was a coffin that was 7 feet long. So this is a lot of weight here.
Yeah.
Because the practice is so old as well, researchers aren't sure how they actually got the coffins up to their resting places. If you scroll down, there's actually a little video clip on there, which we can watch, that gives some theories. So pretty cool stuff.
That's buck wild.
Yeah. Did you catch the stats they said?
Yeah, so it took 12 people 3 days to recreate this process with the materials that they had in that period of the Bow People.
Yeah. And you saw it in the video. They're just lifting this, they said, 500-pound tree log up onto the side of the cliff using a pretty primitive rope and pulley system.
Right.
Did you hear what they said about the clothes they were wearing, too? It said that the people who were doing this were wearing replicas of clothes found on the corpses in the tree trunks.
Okay.
Which is remarkable because these coffins have been here for hundreds, if not almost 1,000 years.
Wait, they replicated the clothes that were worn on the bodies that were buried?
Yeah.
Is it burial if you're hanging on the side of a cliff?
I guess. I don't know how you would really define that, the semantics of that.
Right.
But it's a testament to how well done these were.
Yeah.
That these coffins were sealed in well enough that they were able to retain bones and clothing fragments.
Yeah, it didn't deteriorate. Interesting.
Yeah. And it's also a testament to how long these coffins have been around as well. Like, if you think about the size of China and how much area in China has been pretty untouched for a long time, it's easy to see how if you were a people group and you left that area, nobody else may settle down there or pass through for hundreds of years. And if they did, they might look up and be like, oh, what's that? I don't know what that thing on that cliff is. I don't know. I'll just keep going. And then hundreds of years after that, someone comes through and is like, what? Is that a... Are those coffins?
Or they're a doofus like me and they're like, are those stairs?
But there are some pretty cool photos of researchers having to legitimately rappel to get to these coffins to investigate them. Because you can't really take them off because you don't want to risk knocking it off and having it fall.
Right.
Hundreds of feet and smashing.
Then you got to bury two people.
Yeah, that'd be bad.
The original and the person you just KO'd with a 500-pound tree.
Because there's definitely going to be someone standing under it. Someone's getting nailed.
In my cartoon brain, always, there's always someone standing below.
The Wile E. Coyote.
It's an Acme brand tree coffin.
But it's cool to envision these people who lived hundreds of years ago either having to use a rope and pulley system to get these coffins up there, or another theory is that they would build earthen ramps where you would be able to carry the coffin up the cliff, and then you would destroy the ramp as you went down.
Hmm.
So you would slowly knock the ramp down as you went so that the coffin would be inaccessible.
Yeah. Huh. That has to be super time consuming, though.
Oh, it seems like it would take a minute.
Yeah, or 3 days.
Or 3 days. So we don't really know the reasoning behind this, since this region of China where these coffins can be found is located pretty close to Nepal and Tibet. As you'll recall from our sky burial episode, it may simply be that there's not enough resources and arable ground to bury coffins or to cremate bodies.
Right, the soil is pretty hard to bury in, and they don't exactly grow a lot of trees that they can make fires with to cremate. So, yeah, makes sense.
You saw in the video, too, there's just a lot of rocky cliffs everywhere,
right,
which is not great for burying.
Right, and stairs everywhere. It's weird.
A lot of stairs. Another theory is that this culture simply believed that burying bodies higher up allowed the soul to be closer to heaven when it left the body.
Hmm.
And that putting in this pretty remarkable amount of work to get this body up there was a way to show honor to the soul that used to possess the body and was just a way to honor your ancestors.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, pretty neat.
Yeah.
So now we're actually going to skip ahead a few years into the future and go underground. Dorian, I assume you're familiar with this one. Have you heard of the Terracotta Army?
I have.
Yeah.
This is very cool.
So how about you break off the description for those who don't know?
The Terracotta Army is a collection of terracotta sculptures depicting the armies of Qin Shi Huang, the first emperor of China. It is a form of funerary art buried with the emperor in 210 to 209 BCE, and whose purpose was to protect the emperor in his afterlife. The figures, dating from approximately the late 3rd century BCE, were discovered in 1974 by local farmers. The figures vary in height according to their roles, with the tallest being the generals. The figures include warriors, chariots, and horses. Estimates from 2007 were that the three pits containing the Terracotta Army held more than 8,000 soldiers, 130 chariots with 520 horses, and 150 cavalry horses, the majority of which remained buried in the pits nearby Emperor Qin's mausoleum. Other terracotta non-military figures were found in other pits, including officials, acrobats, strongmen, and musicians.
Yeah, so this is a super cool and super remarkable find that was just kind of buried for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I think even cooler and goofier is that the tomb had been buried for hundreds of years before accidentally being discovered in 1974.
It was March 1974, not long after the Chinese New Year, and as it was particularly dry at the time, Yang Zifa's production unit decided to dig a well to water the crops of the cooperative farm. Quote, "At first, the digging went well. The second day, we hit hard red earth. The third day, my hoe dug out the neck of a terracotta statue without a head, but the opening at the bottom was about the size of a bowl," he recalled. "I commented to my workmate that it was probably the site of an old kiln. He advised me to dig carefully so that we'd be able to dig out any old jars and take them home for our own use."
That's really goofy that this dude was like, oh, if you find any old bowls that are hundreds of years old buried in the ground, let's just keep them.
Give them to me.
I'll hang on to them.
I'll find some use for them. As they went on digging, the peasants came across the shoulders and torso of a statue. So it evidently wasn't a kiln, they thought, but a temple. Then they realized that it was a complete body, apart from one leg that had been cut off and the missing head. As they went on digging, they turned up bronze items. One of Yang's colleagues teased him. "You like a nice pipe, and these things will be worth quite a bit of money. You'll be able to swap them for tobacco."
So he starts digging, and they just start uncovering bits of this old statue.
Historical
thing.
Very beautiful and significant piece of history here.
Yeah. And, you know, at first they're like, oh, if we dig up any cool bowls, let's just take them home and use them. Like, yeah, that'll be rad.
Keep them. Eat these golden grams in style.
Yeah. I've got some golden grams right now, and I forgot how great they are.
Oh, man.
And then they're like, oh, maybe this is a temple, actually. Maybe we won't use it. Let's just sell it to buy some cigarettes.
Now, is tobacco code, like, they had to write tobacco for the report? Basically, Yang is like, one of my coworkers said, hey, you can swap this out for some tobacco. You know what I'm saying?
He was interviewed over the phone, and it didn't pick up the fact that he was doing air quotes with his fingers and winking.
It's some drugs.
Some of the wacky tobacco.
That's right.
Fully excavated, here's a picture of what it looks like.
Oh, wheel. Oh, this is cool as fuck.
It's super cool. And I feel like this is one of those things that you learn about from the Guinness Book of World Records or something.
Right.
When you're a little kid and you're like eight and your stupid little kid brain is too small to be impressed by the scale of the thing.
It'd be a lot cooler if they were real soldiers.
Yeah, like you're like, oh, cool. Was he mummified with his whole army? And it's like, no, dumb,
stupid. It's not real dead people. I don't give a shit.
Okay, shit.
Gonna go play Call of Duty.
When I was like 8 or 9, there's no way that I understood how long it would take to make 8,000. I couldn't even count to 8,000. There's no way. But there's no way I understood how much 8,000 5-foot-8-inch tall soldiers was.
Right, and horses and chariots.
Well, not only the chariot horses, but there were cavalry horses as well. So there's multiple different evolutions of the horse here.
Good lord.
Yeah. And you hear as well that the attention to detail on these is remarkable. Like, all the soldiers are completely unique. They all have unique facial features. They all have different markings on their armor.
Wow.
Like, it was a ton of effort and work that went into making these things.
Right.
And the complex is huge as well. I think the scale of the development is kind of what really adds to it. So how about you tell us what that scale was?
The Terracotta Army is part of a much larger necropolis. Ground-penetrating radar and core sampling have measured the area to be approximately 38 square miles.
That's big.
That's beefy. This is a beefy spot. The necropolis was constructed as a microcosm of the Emperor's Imperial Palace or compound and covers a large area around the tomb mound of the first Emperor. The earthen tomb mound is located at the foot of Mount Li and built in a pyramidal shape and is surrounded by two solidly built rammed earth walls with gateway entrances. The necropolis consists of several offices, halls, stables, other structures, as well as an imperial park placed around the tomb mound. Tomb mound is it's really hard to enunciate all of those smashed up.
There's a lot of whatever the opposite of a plosive is.
You didn't need to put a pronunciation guide for these Chinese names. You need to put a pronunciation guide for these stupid English words. Our language is dumb.
Stupid language. But it's remarkable when you really consider the size and scale of this whole big compound that it's a part of.
Yeah.
We'll probably cover what a necropolis is and famous examples in a future episode. But I do want to underscore the scale of this thing. It says that the Terracotta Warrior Tomb is 38 square miles, which is massive.
Mm-hmm.
In contrast, the land area of Miami, Florida is 35.99 square miles.
So this is bigger than Miami.
Bigger than... I don't know how much water is in Miami. I've never been.
Okay, yeah. There's probably a lot. Is it?
Like, in the city, I can't imagine there would be much.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It's bigger than Miami.
This is a tomb the size of Miami, which is a city that has multiple professional sports teams.
And a lot of alive people.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe more than 8,000.
No terracotta people to our knowledge in Miami.
I mean, it's just tough for me to get my head around the fact that to bury one person, they were like, we're basically going to bang like a whole city's worth of size of our country to his tomb. I mean, he was the first emperor of China, which is cool,
yeah,
I guess.
He's a big deal.
He's a big deal. But Miami has three sports teams that I can think of in like 3 minutes. Like the Miami Marlins are god awful.
The Dolphins probably count as more of a half team at this point in their franchise.
The Heat are good.
Franchise.
The Miami Heat is a good basketball team.
The Heat are very good. This has been your sports moment.
Sports corner.
Sports corner of the Pre-Dead Boys. It's a podcast within a podcast.
It's just me bashing Derek Jeter and the Miami Marlins. If you were the GM of a Necropolis sports team, what would you name your team?
Ooh, would the Necropolis be called Necropolis?
Absolutely.
Okay. The Necropolis... Space Wizards.
That's very good.
There we go. What about you?
I think I would probably go with like the Necropolis Undead.
Yeah.
Or something. Although that's not really that intimidating.
That's pretty creative. What about the Necropolis Wombats? Just throw a curveball.
The Necropolis Dolphins.
That's the best one, frankly.
You're just, like, falling apart when other teams try and tackle you. Like, your arms and limbs are falling off.
Ah!
Oh, no. So let's get out of the past and move towards the more recent future.
About time.
Yeah, it's pretty gnarly up here.
You're always living in the past, Max. Get with the times.
We're actually going to jump out of China for a bit and head into Singapore.
Okay.
So the country of Singapore took in a lot of Chinese immigrants who fled China during Japanese occupation and general Japanese menacing that went along with the early 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
However, Chinese immigrants, like most refugees, were unfortunately confined to slums and shoved to the outskirts of cities.
Mm.
Because Chinese culture really values family unity and caring for your elders, this meant that very old people, such as grandparents or great-grandparents, would typically live with their descendants until they died. However, as a result of the diaspora, families were broken up and shattered. Close family bonds that would generally be found in Chinese culture were no longer there because you had to flee. So this led to the unfortunate situation of a lot of older Chinese folks living in slums and not having anyone there to take care of them. This, in turn, led to the development of death houses. Now, I think you added this topic to our list. I don't know how you heard about this, or if you remember adding this to our list.
Did I? I don't know.
Maybe it was me.
I don't know. I don't know if I want to peel back the curtain on the organizational tactics of the Pre-Dead Boys, because, man, I just make dozens of Google Docs, and I'm like, what if we made a sticker that's also a t-shirt? And just put a bunch of stupid ideas all over the place. So I don't know. I don't remember hearing anything about death houses. I'm a blank slate. Let's start from scratch.
Start painting. It's a pretty sad and unfortunate practice.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole section is kind of a huge bummer, but we'll move through it pretty quickly. But it is important to kind of underscore the family unity that was found in a lot of Chinese culture throughout time, and the unfortunate times that's been broken because of war. So
cool. Well, that's a good reason for me, I guess, to put a temporary pause on my moratorium against feelings. I'm really trying to avoid feelings for 2018, but, you know.
You made it almost 5 months, which is impressive.
Yeah, well, it was a good streak while it lasted, but that's okay. Anyway. The Lane's famous Chinese death houses, or funeral homes, came into existence in the late 19th century. This was the place where people near death will be left to die, with the funeral parlor prepared below. Soon after, more and more death houses started up on the street. By 1948, there were 7 death houses, of which only 2 were licensed as sick-receiving houses. In the 1950s, business for these death houses reached its peak. This was because the early Chinese immigrants that moved into Singapore had all aged. As people were superstitious and believed that it was inauspicious to die in their own home, many chose to pay a small fee to stay in these death houses. Population density in Singapore was also increasing rapidly, causing the number of patrons to increase at an exponential rate. The old Singapore, under the British ruling, offered no proper premise for the dying as well. Thus, death houses became the next best option for many.
Yeah, so this is kind of a really unfortunate dark mark in, you know, not that the entirety of British colonialism isn't a dark spot, because it was pretty gnarly.
A lot of dark spots there.
But this is pretty bad, you know? A lot of poor immigrants were forced to move into basically slum tenements to basically await their own deaths. I can't imagine what it would have been like to not only be separated from your homeland, but also be separated from your family and forced to kind of live really outside your culture.
Right.
In a pretty dark point at the end of your life, you know?
Yeah.
Now, it is worth noting that once the British colonizers left Singapore, the government of Singapore did step up and they dealt with this issue pretty quickly. They had a lot of sympathy and understanding of Chinese culture. So they were able to help immigrants and refugees out with culturally appropriate ways of dying and burial, which is, you know, it's a good on you, Singapore. I don't know if we have any Singaporean listeners, but if we do,
you get a pre-dead boys, 2 thumbs up.
Two thumbs up.
2 skeletal thumbs up.
So, moving on from the bummer stuff, I will close out with a very modern, I generally try to avoid saying weird. This one's pretty weird. A weird issue that's developing in Chinese funerals. Naturally, you would want your funeral to be well attended and, you know, you want people to show up for it. Especially if you had a prominent place in society. You don't want to die like some unknown schmuck.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to look popular at least.
Yeah. If anything, funerals are a popularity contest.
Yeah, that's why we have them, not because people die or anything like that.
You're really trying to show out.
So what is this like, there's people hiring bots to populate their funerals?
You get Russian bots to show up at your funeral. It's topical humor.
Topical.
Well, one of the ways Chinese citizens have attempted to increase attendance at funerals is to bring in exotic dancers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, do you mean exotic as in, like, from a different sort of culture? Like, that kind of general meaning of exotic?
No.
You're talking strippers.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, this is a thing that... It's pretty tough to find information on this because the Chinese government is not happy about this.
Yeah.
And they are not stoked about the rest of the world knowing that this is a practice that's happening in mostly rural China.
Okay. Just, I want to say real quick, just first blush, I am having such a weird cocktail of emotions responding to just this idea that people are hiring strippers. Like, I want to laugh hysterically, but I also want to just put my face in my hands and be like, why? What is happening here?
I mean, it's pretty jarring, to say the least.
Right.
If you imagine attending a funeral and there's just a lot of loud music and dancers everywhere, it's out there. Now, the Chinese government has deemed this a quote-unquote funeral misdeed. Which is a very sanitary way to say it.
Yeah.
And they've actually set up a hotline where you can report funerals that you know are going to have dancers or strippers at them.
Okay.
And you can call the government and they'll come in and kick in the doors and shut it down.
Oh, do they arrest the exotic dancers or do they just say, everybody go home?
I don't know who the offending party is in this circumstance. Okay. I would imagine the family would probably get in trouble. Whoever's paying would get in trouble.
Okay.
And I guess at a lot of these, it's a lot of them are belly dancing, things like that. Yeah. So, you know, some are a little more risque than that. But I don't know if the belly dancing ones get off a little lighter than the others. But the Chinese government believes that this practice, quote, corrupts the social fabric of the country. So a lot of families who choose to host this kind of funeral don't advertise it outside of their own city. You want to bring the city in to bolster the popularity and renown of the person who's died, but you obviously don't want any narcs hearing about it.
Sure.
And ruining your weird grandpa's funeral. But here's a brief description that I was able to dig up.
It has been a long-time tradition in rural China for residents to hire strippers to partake in bawdy performances at funerals in order to attract a larger attendance of mourners. Those locals believe that a high turnout at funerals is a sign of honor for the dead. According to the Global Times, quote, scantily clad women in sexy lingerie and revealing clothes showing off their bodies in front of an electronic screen displaying a black and white headshot of the deceased with the text reading, we offer profound condolences for the death of this man, are now a modern part of funerals in some rural areas of China.
I love that. That's very good.
Very official. Very formal.
At my funeral, I want a lot of black and white photos of me that just says in like impact font, we offer profound condolences for the death of this man.
They don't even put the name. Just this man.
We Jeez. Offer profound condolences.
Profound is one of those words that you can tack on to anything and it'll sound really profound, really meaningful and
really
heavy.
Meaningful.
I had a profound breakfast burrito earlier today.
Did you go to the Dube?
No. It was from a grocery store in a wrapper and I microwaved it and drowned it in Frank's. It really was profound. A profound meal. It
changed my life.
See what I mean? You already were like, wow.
Yeah, I was like, wow,
you've been a damn good burrito. No.
But an $8 burrito.
No, it's just a boring ass burrito. Tasted good though.
It's very good. Yeah, I don't know if I would want a bunch of strippers around my casket. But I do want like Andrew W.K. or whoever the
absolutely
equivalent of Andrew W.K. in hopefully 60 years is to be just partying in front of, we offer profound condolences.
Yeah, that's actually kind of what I vibe with about this idea. I'll just say outright, I would feel very, very uncomfortable if I went to the funeral of a friend, not to see the band. Funeral
nice.
For a friend.
Nice but, cut.
But if I went to a friend or loved one's funeral and strippers just started showing up and performing, I'll be very uncomfortable and I might even leave. That's a personal choice. Just
yeah.
Not a judgment. I do think that it's kind of cool that this is a celebration of life in some way. It's just kind of a bummer that it's a business, you know?
Yeah.
And that it's very detached from the person. One of my biggest concerns is what if the person who's deceased has some kind of objection to strippers being at their funeral, but they have no say in the matter, you know?
Yeah, like you just have like a rowdy nephew playing your funeral and you're like, oh, I don't
and
like
it's just
this.
Not what the deceased wanted at all. That would be a real bummer. But hopefully there are some consensual situations where people are just trying to party and have a good time, and doesn't make it any less weird to me though. I don't know.
Yeah, a lot of the things we talk about, it's like, oh, that's really interesting, and I think that's pretty neat. I don't know, you showing up to a funeral and there being a bunch of belly dancers there is already like, huh,
what's going on here?
Yeah, I think it would kind of,
did I take a wrong turn or
kind of put a damper on the mood of the funeral a little bit, I think.
Yeah. I don't know, man. That's pretty wild.
Yeah. that's really what I had about death culture in China. Those are four kind of neat instances of how they go about it there.
We got the good, the bad, and the very, very weird.
Yeah, I don't feel bad calling that one weird at all.
Very cool. Thank you, Max. That was quite a sampler of some wild stuff.
Little aperitifs.
Mm-hmm. Delicious. Just like this, a coconut LaCroix. Really wish they would support our podcast.
They went on those sponsorship dollars.
Yeah.
I don't even need dollars.
I just want Croix.
I don't even need a 12-pack. I just want like an 8-pack.
LaCroix won't support us, but hey, maybe you will. And we would really appreciate that. One way you can support us is you can leave a review with 5 stars on iTunes. Max, I got a confession to make.
Uh-huh.
I have a favorite fan of the podcast.
A new favorite fan.
I've just picked... What? Nope, not really new. I'll give you a hint. This fan is a dog.
Oh, yeah. This dog is so good.
Shout out to Finnegan.
What's up, Finnegan?
Beautiful golden retriever. Favorite fan of the podcast. Finnegan's owner left us a 5-star review on iTunes. Thank you to Mrs. Lori. She says, Finnegan approved. We're all going to die. So learning about it with a well-balanced mix of humor and strangeness is pretty satisfying. The guys are upbeat and their excitement about the content comes through. Looking forward to more episodes and hopefully some merch, because that cover is sick. Thank you. Finnegan would rock a PDB bandana. And with that, I know what our first piece of merch is going to be.
Doggy bandanas?
I would like that. I don't know. I was kind of thinking like it might be fun to like start out with some kind of freebie, like a card or sticker to just kind of throw at people.
Yeah.
But I'm in it for the cash. That's why I'm here.
I'm in it for the Skrilla.
I'm in it for the merchandising and making millions off of t-shirts and bandanas and koozies and other weird branded stuff. So
we got to get those followers up to do that though.
Yeah, we got some work to do before that happens, but we are definitely looking into it. Regardless, thank you, Lori. Thank you, Finnegan. Finnegan, you're my favorite fan of the podcast.
Hey, Lori, if you could put your phone, just point it at Finnegan really quick. Good boy.
Good boy.
Good boy.
He's a good boy.
Every time I try to get my parents' dogs to listen to this podcast, they ignore me and walk away. Sucks. They're all dumb. Dumb as rocks. Emma's good, but Matthew and Piss Willie are very bad and dumb.
Is that the official name of your dog, Piss Willie?
Piss William. Or Theo. It's split down my family what we call him.
Piss William. Oh, I'm going to be fucked up on that for a minute. That's hilarious. Anyway, thank you for the review. If you leave us a 5-star review, we'll give you a shout out on the podcast. If you're on any device, if you could recommend this show to a friend, show them an episode of us being very funny and awesome. We try to be funny.
Do we have
awesome.
Those?
Well, that's up to you, listener, to find out and then share it with a friend and post it on social media and all that stuff. We'd also love to just hear what you think about the show. We like to hear feedback, episode suggestions, dog photos, your dog Instagram, send them our way. We're stoked to see your dogs and other pets. You can follow us on Twitter and now Instagram.
Ooh.
At PreDeadBoys. You can email us, predeadboys@gmail.com. You can join our Facebook group. Just search Pre-Dead Boys Podcast. Should be the first result. If you would like to help us pay for our hosting fees, for recording equipment, for our LaCroix that we consume every single episode.
Oh, that comes free. You don't need to pay me for that. I'm buying that anyway.
If you'd like to compensate Max on that, we would really appreciate it. If you go to ko-fi.com/predeadboys, you can give us a $3 or more tip. We would love you forever for it. Our intro and outro music is the song About Time by Brat Curse. Check them out at bratcurse.bandcamp.com. And I think that's going to do it for us. Max, I'm going to head out here, start working on my terracotta army. It's gonna be an army of like people with those giant Q-tips from American Gladiators. And
oh, cool.
I'll probably put a predator in there too.
Like one of the 8,000 is a predator.
Yeah, just it's going to look like a gigantic collection of pasty action figures. I'm very excited, but I got to get to work on that. So we will see you guys in 2 weeks. Thanks again for listening.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
one of Yang's colleagues teased him. He said, "You look One of Yang's colleagues teased him, saying, "You look like a nice pipe." Fucking goddamn it.
Oh, got worse that time.
One of Yang's colleagues teased him, saying, "You look a..." What is wrong with me? Why can't I fucking do this episode? I am a piece of shit.
No.
Oh, just fire me. Just fire me from this podcast.
Fuck it.
Welcome to Pretty Dead Boys. I'm Max. And I'm also Max.
I'm a Pretty Dead Boy.
Who'd you replace me with if you could have any celebrity co-host? John Cougar Mellencamp.
Fuck yeah, dude. I don't even know what that dude sounds like.
Sucking on chili dogs.
Out by the taste of freeze.